Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Steve Penny, publisher of the Silver Chartist Report. And Steve, it's always great having you on the show to get your thoughts on the metals markets, on the miners, and just the way you're looking at things. And just as a heads up, Steve is out remotely and he doesn't have his normal microphone situation and setup, so the audio is a little rough on his end, but we still felt the information was important enough to share with everybody at the KE Report and hope you'll bear with us because the information's worth it. As we look at our beloved precious metal sector, they've had a rough time in 2021. So as we kind of wrap up the year here, it might be nice to look at where are the price levels, what could break them out, what could break them down. And you have sent over a gold chart that we will post down below this interview. And let's start there. When you look at this daily chart for gold from really the August 2020 high to present, what stands out to you?
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Shad. It's certainly been a pretty disappointing year for gold and silver investors. And, you know, the bad news is the worst may not be over quite yet. However, I do think, you know, the next several quarters do look pretty promising, but the short term here remains to be seen. So when you talk about the short term chart for gold here, we're hovering just below the 200-day moving average. Anyone who's been listening to us for a while knows that that's an indicator or a line on the chart that I think matters a lot. But we're also approaching the apex of this smaller little triangle pattern that you can see more clearly on the weekly chart that is also included. And, you know, I'm expecting a sharp move one way or the other. But if we fail here, if immediate support fails, I think the path of least resistance would be a pullback towards 1675 and perhaps even just an undercut, a slight undercut of that 1675 support. And to be honest, I'm almost hoping for that. I'm almost hoping for just a capitulation sell-off to get this over with and let's see a trend reversal into early 2022.
Yeah, Steve, we had talked a little bit about that off mic before we started recording. And there's some people, like your peer David Brady, that feels like it may be best just to rip the Band-Aid off and have that capitulation move, get a final washout, and then build from there for the next leg higher, which almost everybody is looking at next year, you know, being a pretty constructive year for the precious metals. But I'm still a little scared, and I'll just ask you this, you know, if gold goes down and tests that 1675 level after already double bottoming there in March and then having that August swoon where it just came down, tested it, and reversed quickly, if it tested a fourth time or fifth time, are you worried that it would break down more severely, or do you think it would just be a bear trap?
Well, that's very true. Whenever support or resistance is tested, the more times it's tested, the more likely it is to fail. So you come back down and tap 1675 again, and that was actually support going all the way back to April 2020 as well. So yeah, there's a possibility that 1675 would fail. What my baseline expectation, if that were to happen, now we're still up, you know, over $100 north of this price, so we're not even, you know, it's no guarantee we're going to come back down. But if we do, I would look for a brief undercut of 1675, and they call that a false breakdown or a false breakout. And that's actually bullish. If you just, if the support fails, but then it reclaims it in short order. And I would also be looking for a negative, they call it a positively divergent higher high or a lower low. Sorry, that's a mouthful there. Positively divergent lower low, where you make a new low in price, but momentum indicators like RSI don't make a lower low. So that's the ideal scenario. Just a slight undercut of 1675 where RSI makes a higher low. And I think that would be a good sign that perhaps, you know, the worst is over and we can turn the corner here in early 2022.
And for people that are just learning technical analysis, Steve, just speak to why those divergences where price action may be different than what you see in volume or the RSI or other chart indicators, how that plays out to potentially a false signal and often a reversal signal.
Yeah, it's just, I think a lot of technical patterns are kind of self-fulfilling prophecies. So the most common patterns, if enough people see it and are tracking these things, you know, it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's what happens. You know, a lot of these institutional trading algorithms look at these basic patterns. They look for positive divergence. So I think that's the case here. That would be the case.
Well, and then just one more thing on this gold chart. You have that larger triangle pattern in place where if we look at the weekly, it's getting closer and closer to that larger apex that goes all the way back to September of 2018 where that uptrend line starts. And then the downtrend line is coming down from August of 2020. And it's coming to a point where we know there's usually a big move one way or the other. Do you think that we could actually just spend most of the first quarter whipsawing back and forth as we compress further in that symmetrical triangle?
Absolutely. And what's interesting about that line, that primary uptrend line going back to 2018, is right now that support roughly coincides with 1675. So that's an extra confluence of support down there at 1675. to reinforce that support. But yeah, I can easily see this going into the late part of the first quarter of 2022 before we finally break out to the upside. Which, you know, that may sound far off, but really 3 months, we've endured over a year and a half of this. So, you know, another 3 months wouldn't be too bad.
Agreed. What's another 3 months of pain amongst friends in the precious metals? let's shift over to the other precious metal, and that is silver. We've got a weekly chart you've prepared here, and you had outlined that the 2181 was a good level of support. That goes back to a couple different areas that have kind of tapped that support line. But you also had highlighted for us a couple weeks back what you thought was a bearish rising wedge, and it looks like that's what's played out. So just walk us through what you're looking at here and where we're at today on the silver chart.
Absolutely. So in late November, we highlighted this bearish rising wedge, and we said if that lower rail were to fail of support, the path of least resistance would be a back test of the $22 area. And sure enough, that's where we are right now. Now, you and I were talking before, you know, it kind of makes you nervous. The $22 area is kind of like the equivalent of 1675 in gold. It's the major support where if this fails, you know, there's another dollar or two of downside potential. So I think it's important that we hold here. I do think it's likely we get a short-term bounce, but the last line in the sand is 2181. That's the low that goes back to September of 2020. If 2181 were to fail, yeah, it's possible we get a quick flush down towards, you know, the 19s or even 18s.
Well, Steve, I don't think we would like to see that, and I don't think the silver mining companies that we invest in would like to see that. Most producers are profitable above $20, but once you get down into the $18, $19 level, it really would compress their margins, so that would probably hit the silver stocks pretty hard. But on the positive side, what level of resistance would you want to see silver break above for you to feel like we're gaining some traction to the upside?
Well, and just to go back for a second on what you just said, yeah, that would be painful. But if that were to happen, which is not a foregone conclusion, but if it were, I think that it's very likely to be short-lived if something like that were to happen. And, you know, it all depends on your perspective. Like for someone who has cash and is still building a position, building their portfolio, you know, that could be a gift. It's for those who are all in at this point that, you know, you just have to kind of endure, you know, that kind of pullback if it were to happen. But as far as resistance, we've got, I call this the silver squeeze downtrend channel because it goes back to February 1st of 2021 when the silver squeeze began. And every time we rally up towards the upper rail of that downtrend channel, you know, we fail. And getting above that, I think, is the first probably hurdle towards confirming a technical reversal. And that's still a ways up. That's up around $26 right now.
Yeah, so there'd be a little bit of work to do for silver to get up there and really break above that downtrend channel. Yeah, and as far as the being a good opportunity for people that are still in cash and looking to build a position, absolutely. But for some of us, I feel like someone that's been at a buffet and already been the third time, I've got a plate of food and I've almost filled up everything. And then people are saying, hey, they've got a new round of food coming out. It's going to be great. It's like, that's great, but I've already eaten all I can, so I'm hoping that we hold here, hold steady, Steve, and that we do see a little upside traction in 2022, but people should have a strategy for whatever happens in the markets and be able to plan accordingly. Any other final thoughts on gold or silver or the gold or silver miners before we move over to some other commodities?
No, I would just say if the worst case scenario happens here, and you know, hopefully we're not dwelling on the worst case potential too much, because if I were to assign a probability, admittedly subjective, I'm thinking maybe there's a 30-35% chance we pull back down that low. So I think it's likely that support here holds. But if it fails, we should be mentally prepared for that. But if that happens, like I said, I think it would be short-lived because that would likely coincide with a deflationary impulse. And we all know that the Fed and central planners can't stand deflation. So I think that would just, you know, be the catalyst for them to reverse course on taper and tightening monetary policy. And we'd probably see them open up the spigots again, which would be the catalyst for the next bull run higher in the metals. So the downside would be painful in the short term, but I think that would be, it would just set us up for higher highs.
Absolutely. And it would actually be a good basing period and consolidation period to build a new leg higher from that would be pretty solid after this long of a correction, because they usually wear you out in price or in time. And having been time and price in this standpoint, if we did see a further pullback, that would probably be it and be a good place to build a longer term uptrend from. Let's pivot over to one more metal that's still kind of a pseudo-precious metal, and that's platinum. It's really more of an industrial metal. It's really got most of its driver in the automotive sector, either in catalytic converters or now in the new blossoming fuel cell technology. But platinum typically, over history, has traded at a premium to gold. It's more scarce than gold. It's harder to mine. There's not as much supply. So generally, platinum had a nice premium to the yellow metal. But you've provided a ratio chart that shows how gold and platinum fit together. What do you take away from this and some of the recent action we've seen in platinum relative to gold?
Yeah, what really jumps out to me with platinum is the ratio compared to other metals to include gold. I mean, it's just historically beaten down. And platinum reminds me a lot of almost of uranium a couple of years ago, where after the Fukushima disaster, the world swore off nuclear, and that led to massive buying opportunities, over the next 10 years. I don't think platinum is going to play out over 10 years, but in 2015, they had that Dieselgate scandal, and kind of almost like the world swore off platinum, and because that's a major part of diesel catalytic converters. But I feel like that's been overblown, and the bullish catalysts are being overlooked, like you mentioned, hydrogen fuel cell technology, and also now that platinum is so cheap relative to palladium, substitution. There's indications now that major car auto manufacturers are beginning to substitute platinum for palladium, and I think that's a trend that's likely to continue. So all that to say, platinum to gold ratio, platinum is extremely cheap here, and I'm personally accumulating physical metal. One of the challenges with investing in platinum is finding quality mining stocks to invest in. I can count on one hand the amount of platinum miners that I would even be interested in. I own a couple of them, but I prefer just the physical metal when it comes to platinum.
Well, Steve, just in looking at this chart, it looks like for the first time in a long time, over the last couple of years, platinum finally did break above that trend line that was really in place for almost over a decade and poked its head up above it. It's pulled back down to support. You've got a little compression triangle on here as well, and it's still technically above the trend line. So I guess it's at a precarious place here. What do you make of that? Do you think we'll get back up into that compression triangle and then a break one way or the other? Or, what are you looking at when you see where things are at support currently?
Yeah, specifically talking about the platinum versus gold ratio chart. We did break out above that downtrend line, like you said, and that happened in January 2021, so almost a year ago now. And now we're back testing that line right now, almost to the penny. But you also mentioned that triangle pattern. It looks like we kind of broke just a little bit below that triangle pattern. So it wouldn't surprise me if platinum underperforms gold for a couple months more. But I think if you've got a 1 to 5 year time horizon, platinum, I think, is very likely to outperform gold. And personally, I plan to accumulate some physical platinum now and swap it for gold later as that ratio compresses.
I appreciate you sharing those charts with us and the discussion on platinum. And we've also noted in a previous interview that it even looks pretty interesting compared to its platinum to silver ratio. And really, platinum compared to a lot of commodities looks pretty interesting. So definitely one to keep eyes on as we move into 2022. You did mention it kind of looks like uranium did a couple years ago to you. So let's shift over to the uranium sector. I know you follow this sector closely, Steve, and you've provided a chart of the URNM, NS Global Uranium Mining ETF. This is a good basket of uranium stocks. It's a good way to track the sector as far as the uranium miners. There's a big uptrending channel here, but we have moved down kind of closer to the bottom end of that trend line that's coming up as support. What do you make of it where it's at currently, and where do you think uranium miners are heading as we move into the first quarter?
Yeah, we highlighted this bearish rising wedge on the weekly chart the first week of November. And, whenever you say anything bearish about a sector that we're emotionally tied to, to include silver, uranium, gold, platinum, whatever the case may be, it's often hard to hear. And, I got criticized because people cite the bullish fundamentals, and I'm wildly bullish on the uranium sector. However, we had gotten a little bit stretched, and we pulled back nicely. And my first pullback target was between 75 and 80 on URNM. And the low, and that was last week, was $73. So I think this is attractive levels for accumulation. However, it wouldn't surprise me to pull back just a little bit more towards the lower rail of this very clear uptrend channel. And what's interesting about the lower rail of that channel, it's reinforced by horizontal support around the 70 level. And then if I pull up the daily chart, let me see what the 200-day moving average is. I know it roughly coincides with the lower rail of that channel. Yeah, the 200-day moving average right now is 69.56. So you've got a nice, really strong confluence of support right around 70. So downside risk, in my opinion, is minimal relative to the upside potential. Could go a little bit lower, but I think it's pretty attractive right here to start accumulating again.
Well, Steve, just like in any sector, people hate it until it does well, then people love it. And obviously, uranium has been a breakout in 2021 as far as the commodity sector, and really in specific, the mining sector. A lot of the uranium miners are up 3x, 5x, some are even up 10x, and then they have had this corrective move. Now, some people are saying, the move is over for a long time, and it's probably going to bite the dust. There's other people that are extremely bullish fundamentally and think this thing's going higher and higher and higher. Now, when you look at a chart, what's nice is it cancels out a lot of the narrative. It cancels out a lot of the noise, and you just look at the price action. Would you be concerned if we did break below that long trend line that started really at the beginning of 2020, like let's say March of 2020 when there was that pandemic low all the way through present? If URNM was to break down below that, would that be an area of concern for you, or would you see that more as a bear trap?
Well, I guess concern depends on your perspective. Like the fundamentals are still wildly bullish, and I think $65 plus uranium is, of course, nothing's guaranteed, but I have a high level of confidence that we're eventually going to see that in the next 1 to 3 years. So, but that said, if we did break below the lower rail of that uptrend channel, that could just delay the inevitable, in my opinion. So it could postpone the next leg higher, but it doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. I do think that support is likely to hold, but if it doesn't, yeah, you're right. It would just postpone the next leg higher. And there are a couple things to consider. Like if you look at a lot of the monthly charts or the mining stocks, even uranium itself, the RSI is still overbought. So that's one kind of caution signal to watch. I mean, RSI can stay overbought, especially on the monthly chart for long periods of time. But, it's still something just to keep in the back of your mind. We're a little bit stretched on the longer-term chart still.
Would you see that as a buying opportunity if we did see some of those chart indicators cool down more in more of a capitulative event where it broke down below that trend line? Obviously, for the fundamentals, we're all looking at that as more bullish moving forward. So would you see that as a buying opportunity, or would you be concerned that maybe a more protracted basing period where there'd be an opportunity cost to trying to get in and maybe go sideways for a year or so?
I would see it as a buying opportunity. That's why I like commodities, because if you have a deep conviction or an understanding of the fundamental bull case, it gives you the conviction, I guess, to hold through these prolonged downturns or basing periods. So yes, I would see any pullbacks as a big opportunity if that were to happen.
Well, just one more thing as we kind of wrap up, Steve, and that is how you allocate your portfolio. I think a lot of people are reactionary, they're emotional creatures as humans, and they tend to get excited about a sector or a stock or a tip or something like that. And they don't really think about how to slow down before they speed up and think about how do they want to design their portfolio. You've spent a lot of time with that. So when we cover gold and silver and platinum and the uranium sectors, how do you currently look at balancing your portfolio with the commodities and then also specifically within the mining stocks that you hold?
Yeah, so I could go a lot of different directions with that question, but one thing I think that I personally really like and I think is worth considering is keeping a separate dedicated trading portfolio or a dedicated account that's separate. And within that account, that's where I'll trade, and it's easier for me psychologically, mentally to take profits or to buy the dips in that account. And whenever I trade, I always use a stop loss. So if things move against me, I automatically get stopped out. And then that becomes cash available to scoop up bargains if you do see kind of a washout low. So that's one thing to consider. And personally, I do that with 10% of my overall portfolio. Another thing that I see with newer investors is they get overly allocated to explorers and developers, really small cap names, high risk, high reward plays, when there's plenty of leverage just in the junior producers or in the royalty plays. So we don't have to be all in explorers and developers. If you choose to do that, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think a lot of newer investors don't understand the risk they're taking on. So as long as you understand what you're doing, that's fine. But your portfolio does not have to be all explorers and developers.
Well, just along that point, Steve, you'd like to have some anchor positions that are kind of lower risk, but may still have some nice leverage. And then some positions that are kind of middle of the pack and some that are lower. Do you have a rough ratio of what you like to see, like percentage-wise, as far as how many are lower risk, medium risk, high risk? Or is it more how much do you have allocated to gold versus silver versus uranium versus other metals like copper or platinum? How do you break down the percentages that you want to hold personally, or does it change over time?
Well, yeah, it does change over time. Right now, about 20% of my portfolio is in explorers and developers. I call them high risk speculations. And I'm comfortable with that number, but that doesn't mean it's the right number for everyone else. Some considerations, like let's say you had, I think of the mining sector as representing a portion of your overall financial pie. Now, if you're all in on the mining stocks, you probably don't want to be all in on the high risk speculations, because that's just your whole financial future is very risky there. But let's say you took 10% of your overall investment portfolio and put towards the mining sector, well, then I'd be more inclined to be more aggressive on the higher risk place. So that's the way I think about it personally.
Okay, and then maybe one last question while we're thinking about portfolios and strategy, and that is everybody should have an exit strategy. And I think you've mentioned before that eventually, if silver was to run big or if uranium was to run big and have the kind of move that we all hope that they can, you may rotate into more safer names and actually move from silver to gold? Or could you just explain the concept of having the exit strategy and what you're looking for from a more medium to longer term macro picture to play out?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's probably the most important thing an investor in this space can do is have an exit strategy. Write it down. You can write it in pencil and you can change it and tweak it over time, but it's important to have one. I like to say whenever you push the buy button, have a subsequent plan to push the sell button. Buying is relatively easy compared to selling. Selling is hard, especially when things are moving in our favor and you get FOMO and all this. So one of the concepts I like to think about is I call it de-risking the portfolio as the bull market matures. So as this bull market gets moving in our favor again, you know, over time, I'll be gradually de-risking. And that means taking profits from the more speculative names and cycling them into the larger cap royalty plays and even into physical metal. And also, you know, I personally plan to swap some platinum and silver for gold as the bull market matures. So the concept there is de-risk the portfolio as the bull market matures.
Well, that's a very balanced way to look at it and something that all investors should at least think about. So maybe investors listening in can think about what their strategy is when they've bought and what their exit strategy is on individual positions or even on sectors and the weighting that they have towards them. Steve, it's always great getting your thoughts, man, and on the technical side and the fundamental side. For those that are not familiar with Steve's service, everybody should check out the Silver Chartist Report. He's got a free service and a paid service. They're both fantastic, and I'll put a link to that down below this interview. And Steve, we just appreciate having you share some time with us here at the KE Report.
You betcha. Thank you so much.